And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket.
Dave, the question of socialism came up this week. I don't think anybody looked at it this way, but when SVB went down, Silicon Valley Bank went down, and the federal government stepped in and unilaterally extended insurance to every depositor being big companies, companies that had millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and even a billion and a half on deposit with that bank, and you know, saved their money. Otherwise, they would have lost their money. The bank would have gone under, and that would have been that. They would have collected $250,000, given up whatever was over the $250,000. It took the Biden administration 2 days to come up with that and do it. And yet, for some reason, somehow, how many tens of thousands of students are there with student loans that they shouldn't have had to take out and they can't pay back and usually don't get paid back until people are in their 70s. Those loans can't be forgiven, according to the Republicans. So who's for socialism here?
It's whoever needs it.
Whoever has the power to get it.
That's it. Yeah, the power to get it. There's a lot to unpack there. There's an awful lot to unpack there because and it gets to the inequities. But first of all, you know, Silicon Valley is full of these libertarian entrepreneurs who really, really chafe at the idea of regulation and are enraptured with their own sense of being and purpose and, you know, kings of the world, so to speak. And all of a sudden, they found that, as you said, there's not enough money. Well, at least there wasn't enough current money to cover these things. So we had that, and the government had to go in. Now, don't forget, there was insurance. Everybody would get $250,000.
Yeah, but that doesn't count if you're looking at millions, tens of millions.
Right.
Or in Roku's case, $1.6 billion.
Right. But it wasn't just the company's money that was there. It was also the fact that a lot of that money was to be used for payrolls. So in bailing this out, to use a term of art, they were helping the workers, all these thousands of workers who needed to get paid. So it wasn't one of these pure things where the top people got bailed out. Don't forget, in terms of the bank, the stockholders lost everything. The bondholders lost everything. The upper management got thrown out. And some of the money that the upper management made is going to be clawed back, or they're going to try to claw that back. So we'll see what happens there on that.
No, I understand that, but look, the bank is on one side. The companies that deposited money in the bank, they're on the other side. Now, when you deposit money in a bank, you're lending the bank money.
Right.
It's your money. It's an asset on your balance sheet. On the bank's balance sheet, it's a liability because they borrowed it from you and they pay interest. Well, they do something. If they can get away with paying, paying interest, they'll do that.
Yeah, up to the last couple months, the interest that they paid was bupkis.
Bupkis, exactly. But the point is, they owe it to you. It's not theirs.
Right.
It's not theirs. Now, you and I go into the bank to borrow money. We have to prove to the bank that we can pay the money back, that we don't live a dissolute lifestyle, that we don't have too many obligations, that the cash is going to be there. You don't do that. They don't lend you the money. So now here's a corporate treasurer or a chief financial officer of a company. He's going to deposit in this bank, I don't know, $500 million. He certainly has the clout to call up the president of SVB and say, I want a meeting with you. I want to review your risk policies right. to make sure that when I want my money, it's there. That president is going to meet with him. If that, those companies didn't do that, you know, they were derelict in their duty.
Well, there's a lot there. First of all, I'm reminded of, I forget who it was, might have been Mark Twain or Will Rogers or H.L. Mencken that said, a banker is someone who only lends money to someone who doesn't need it.
I think that's probably Mencken.
Yeah. And, you know, the explanation how banks work, there are two classic explanations. One, I heard the speech, the first fireside chat that FDR gave a few days into his presidency when they declared the bank holiday. And he sat down and in very common terms explained to people what happens to your money when you put it in the bank. That it's that the bank uses it to lend out, to do other things. And but he also then put in this FDIC and these ideas. The other explanation came in, I think it was 1946, with that movie It's a Wonderful Life with George Bailey and Mr. Potter. And remember, there was a run on the bank there, and George Bailey went in and he used his wedding money to shore up the bank. And you know, his explanation is, you know, the bank doesn't have your money here. It's in Mr. Martini's house that we lent him the money for and this or that. So there are ways of explaining it to the average person, but you're pretty right in terms of who is, you know, where are all the watchdogs? And there really should be multiple levels of watchdogs. One is the controller of the currency or the government, and they apparently, you know, with Dodd-Frank, they had put in some of these things, but these mid-sized banks, led by the guy who was the president of SVB, went to Congress and said, you know, take some of these controls off of us. It hampers our ability to risk reward, to get bigger rewards for and make bigger risks.
Well, you see, there you have it. The bank management has and even the bank people who are the equity owners of the bank, they didn't go into banking to lend money. They went into banking to make profit. Just like any businessman goes into whatever business he goes into to make a profit. And the bank management of SVB did a great job. They made fantastically good profits. But their outlook was, how much can I make this quarter? How much can I make this half year? How much can I make this year? And year after year, they did great with a very risky strategy. Ultimately, as odds do work, you know, it could be the odds are 1 in 100, but if you do it enough times, that one time comes up. And the thing that was the danger to them, that interest rates would turn against them, happened.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they couldn't, everything they got went away.
Now, don't forget that bank, they went without a risk manager for 9 months into from last
money.
May.
They saved more money.
Into January, yeah. So, you know, the CFO and the CEO should have been on this if they, number one is they shouldn't have gone that long without a risk manager. Number two, knowing that they didn't have a risk manager, they should have been more diligent. I mean, everybody in the world knew that interest rates were going to go up, and they started going up.
Well, they had to go up. They were beneath zero.
Yeah, you can't go down any farther than that. So, we have these things. Now, of course.
But you see, that's why you need a regulator. Because the business guys who run the bank, they have their profit. That's their interest. The people who put the money in the bank, they have a different interest. They want to get their money when they need their money. So somebody has to regulate it. Somebody has to have the power that doesn't have the interest of making a profit, but has the interest of making sure the thing functions and the people who lent the money can get their money back. That's the government.
Yeah, well, you know, in a perfect world, on a well-run bank, you don't need regulators. But the fact of the matter
is
there's
no
always
such
somebody.
Thing. There is no
there's
such
always
thing.
Somebody. There's always somebody who wants to hedge and get the get an advantage or is willing to cut corners.
That's right.
And
that's capitalism is built into the system.
That's the greed. That's called the greed part of capitalism.
No, but there's another aspect to it. Don't forget, if you're the manager of a public company, you have an obligation to produce the highest profit you can. You have a legal obligation to produce the highest profit you can. So,
that's in question. I mean, that was the Milton Friedman theory, but you know, there is also, as you started mentioning, short term and long term. And one would think that the solvency of the bank long term is something that needs to be preserved over and above everything else in order to be able to make profit.
But in the whole history of capitalism, that has never been the overriding point of view. The short term profit is the overriding point of view. That's how it works. And if that's how it works, that's how it works. So you got to take that into account. Like somebody said, it's not the world you want. It's the world you got that you have to deal with.
Yeah. And of course, then the GOP and were quick to try to blame and said, no, this was because of the woke people that they had minorities.
That's preposterous. That's not even worth discussing.
It got shot down pretty quickly. Yeah. Lloyd Blankfein, who used to run Goldman Sachs, came out and said that's BS. And
What has that got to do with anything?
But they're always on message, Jake. They're always on. This thing has got them really worried that actually we would, in the long term, try to preserve the ecology of the planet. You know that's.
Exactly right. We got to preserve the ecology of the planet. But without that, you don't need a bank.
Right. You don't need a bank. So we have all these currents and undercurrents happening.
It's laughable that the Republicans should come up with that. They should be ashamed.
But don't forget, they're talking in a silo, in a messaging silo. So their people only hear this. They don't hear the other side.
Well, I got that. I understand that. But they still ought to be ridiculed.
Yeah. So this hasn't quite played out.
I mean, that's yet. Like a guy that says, the guy's looking for something on the corner of Spruce and Penn. He said, some guy comes up to him and says, what are you looking for? He said, I dropped my ring on Wyoming. I'm looking for it. He said, but you're at Spruce. He says, his light's better here.
That's it.
Right?
Ba-dum-bum. How do you deal with that logic? You know,
you can't deal with it, but you got to expose it.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the task of political leadership. You got to expose it.
Yeah.
And now you don't do it in a technical way where people can't understand. Do it in a simple way. It's possible to do. It's possible to do. But the fact is, that's right. People would have not had money for their wages. They would have been the workers would have been the victims of all of this. Their companies would have shut down. All kinds of horrible things would have happened. And all because of the Trump inspired. End of regulation, which is what all these right-wing anarchists want, all these libertarians want.
And you're left with the lesser of the bad choices.
Yeah.
So, we don't know how this is going to play out over the weekend or whatever, but we'll see. If they're able to stop the bleeding and everything, we'll just go on to the next crisis.
It is spreading. Look, Credit Suisse had all of a sudden discovered it needed an injection of 53 billion euros. God, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, they've been a troubled bank for a long time. The government bailed them out, but now I understand that the other Swiss bank is looking at buying them out and taking over.
Why should we have these little banks? If the only banks that can afford regulation are the big banks, why do you want little banks? If my money is insecure in anything but a big bank, I'm only going to put it in the big bank.
Because these community banks sometimes are able to do things. They know who they're dealing with.
Oh, that's very interesting. Community bank. So in my county, we have a community bank.
Right.
It's been here many, many, many years, over 100 years, 80 years, something like that. It's really not the same bank. It's just the same people. 80 years ago, it had one name. 60 years ago, it had a different name. 40 years ago, it had a third name. And each time, some other group bought it out and changed the name.
Right.
Basically, it's that bank, right?
Yeah.
So now, it's not a local bank at all. It's a regional bank owned by a middle-sized banking corporation headquartered in the middle of New York State. Nobody who works in the banks in my county has the right to make decisions. All they have the right to do is write up a report and send it up to the banking headquarters in the middle of New York State. They make the decisions. So it's not a little bank, a neighborhood bank. It's not a local bank. And yet everybody thinks of it as a local bank.
Well, but, I'm not sure every of the smaller bank works that way, but some of them certainly do. And,
but consolidation is the way of business.
Oh, right? Remember, it wasn't that long ago that interstate banking was banned. Pennsylvania, you could only have a bank branch in a contiguous county.
But that's gone. That's gone.
Well, that's been gone for a long time.
Yeah,
it's been gone for a long time.
That went with the It's a Wonderful Life. That's the good old days. That's bringing back America great again.
That's
when banks were too weak to stand on their own 2 feet.
Right, but there was that illusion of the appeal there, that people say, hey, look, I never got bailed out, or I couldn't get bailed out, so why should we bail these other people out? And it's a hard explanation on things. Well, if you want the whole banking system to crash, that's fine, and everybody goes down, and then you'll be happy. You're no worse than anybody else. And this applies to other things. We saw that with the student loans. No one paid no one bailed me out of my loan. Why should someone else get this?
But why shouldn't they? You should too. But and I'm for you getting it too. Right. They should get it, and you should get it. You shouldn't have had to take the loan out. I didn't have to take a loan out. Not because my father worked in a factory. If I'd had to come up with the money to go to college, I'd have gone to college to sell newspapers in the college, not to take classes in the college. But the college I went to was free. But there are free colleges now.
Yeah. Well, I went to one private college and to a state law, affiliated law school. And when I look back at what my tuition was, I still took out loans. It took me about at least 11 or I think I finally paid my last loan off just before I went to California, which was 11 years after I finished law school.
That's a crime.
Yeah.
It's a crime. Society needs lawyers. Society trains lawyers. The industry needs it. Why does the lawyer have to pay to work for industry? That's what you're doing. You're paying to work, to qualify yourself to work for industry. But they're benefiting.
Well, that's the other thing. You get people who's, particularly elderly people. Why should I pay school taxes? My kids are long gone. But
Your kids are long gone. But meanwhile, you're living. Well, somebody's got to run the economy.
Yeah, and who do you think paid when your kids were in school?
Exactly.
Because that next set of educated people, one of them might be the person who invents something that saves your life.
And plus, who's paying you? Who do you think is paying your Social Security right now? You're not paying it. You paid somebody else's Social Security. The guy who's working now is paying your Social Security. This is an interdependent economy.
That is true. That is true. Although Donald Trump says that we as Americans are the greatest threat to the world right now, to the Western civilization. It's Americans. It's not Russians. It's not oligarchs. It's not anything else.
I suppose you could make that case, but I don't think Trump can make that case. I have no idea what Trump could mean. If you wanted to say that the American government supports ruthless dictators and supports terrible oppressors and supports child, you could make that case. You can make that case.
Right.
But Trump isn't going to make that case. So what case is he making? What's his point?
His point is that he wants to continue to animate his base through fear and aggrievement, and because it's worked for him in the past, although it did not, it's not working right now for the Republican Party. The 2022 election was a rejection of that, but he's not going away, and he's got his mini-me, Governor DeSantis, who's trying to take it to a different level on there.
Everybody says DeSantis is Trump with brains, right? I don't think he has many brains. But what does he say that's so smart? What is he? What? I mean, Trump is smarter than he. Trump knows how to talk to people. He doesn't.
No. Yeah, he's Trump without personality.
Yeah.
And it's starting to show. It's starting to show. You were telling me about some of the polling that's.
Yes, it's very interesting. 538, you know, statisticians, they did a study about the Republican race. And what they did was they took every polling organization and they just tracked what they've been discovering, Trump versus DeSantis. They don't argue that these guys are right, that these guys are wrong, that these guys are better than those guys. That's not their point. Their point is, what do they say? And what they discover is that every one of them, 20 or more different companies, whether they're pro-DeSantis or pro-Trump, if they're known to have a bias or they don't have a bias, whatever it is, all of them discover that in the last 3 months, Trump's lead over DeSantis has grown. All of them say that. Now, some say the lead is such a magnitude, others say it's a different magnitude, but all of them say there is that magnitude. Trump's ahead and is growing. So you got to figure they may not be right about the specific number, but they got to be right about the trend if they all say the trend is the same.
Yeah, I mean, you know, DeSantis was doing really well before Trump got into things. But even the little bit that Trump has gotten into has reduced or taken the sheen off of DeSantis at this point, or to an extent. You've got to wonder about what it's going to do to other potential candidates getting in the race.
What potential candidates? Do you think Nikki Haley is going to count?
Well, she's already in the race.
Yeah, but you think she's going to count?
No. Mike Pence.
Mike Pence has less chance than my dog. My dog is not a Republican, so he's not in that primary.
He's not in that primary. Right. Yeah, Mike Pence. You know, you've still got. I heard the word Chris Christie today going up to New Hampshire, and Mike Pompeo. You still hear, and Tim Scott. And it may be, you know, some of these people may be just getting in to get the experience to run again. Four years later, that is sometimes a motivation to learn the ropes, so to speak. But we'll have. You know.
I think DeSantis's bubble has burst. I don't think that he is going to be able to make an effective campaign against Trump. So the real question is, are the DAs going to make a real run against Trump and keep him from running or affect his running? Because it looks like he's going to get indicted, right?
Yeah, New York, and we don't know exactly what charges. There's some rumors that it may be more than what people think. I'm not sure about that. And then what that does, they're preparing for security. Trump, you know, when Trump has to report to take a plea and be fingerprinted and whatever, we'll see. Now we still don't know what's happening.
What's the security? Pro-Trump people are going to keep him from getting fingerprinted?
No, but you may have demonstrations and things.
You mean in, you his, may support, have, in his support?
You may have anti-Trump demonstrations. You may have clashes. I hope not.
Why would anybody, in that situation, if the cops haul them in to be fingerprinted, the cops are the demonstrators.
Yeah. Well, this is one reason they want to get rid of the cops. You know, they want to get rid of law enforcement.
Right. And
we're still not sure exactly what's happening in Georgia. Apparently, they found another tape. With Trump trying to influence and get votes.
So that knocks out his argument that he was just acting impulsively, right? That was his argument on that. That call in Georgia doesn't matter. He was just acting out. But if there's more than one call, it's already a plan.
Yeah, but it you know, remember weeks ago, the DA in Georgia said that she was going to do something that was imminent. And we still don't have it. You wonder what's happening. Is she kind of realizing how big a bite she's being taken? She's gonna.
She must have realized that a long time ago, don't you think?
You would think.
Yeah.
She's
not a dope.
No.
And she's, you know, she's always experienced DA, right?
Yeah, but this is, you know, a big deal even for an experienced DA down there.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought the Georgia cases were pretty strong, but particularly the phony elector parts of that. I mean, that's pretty open and shut fraud, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There. But these other attempts to influence, and who knows, you know, Rudy Giuliani could be indicted. I don't know if the senator.
If you're Rudy Giuliani, aren't you pissed off at Trump? He pays everybody's legal bills, but he doesn't pay Rudy Giuliani's legal bills.
These people never learn.
Yeah.
They never learn that Trump, you know, I call it the reverse Midas touch. Everything he touches turns to crap.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Rick Wilson wrote the book, Everything He Touches Dies. They never, you know, Michael Cohen is the guy that learned that, you know, Trump has only one way loyalty. Mm-hmm. By the way, you saw with one way loyalty that Thunder and Lightning, the two former congressmen from Pennsylvania, Lou Barletta and Tom Marino, who were the first ones to endorse Trump, Barletta did not get endorsed by Trump when he ran.
Trump shifted Barletta, right?
Yeah.
Barletta, so now they've been bad as hell, right?
Now they've gone out the limb and endorsed DeSantis. They may regret that too.
Yeah.
And we have stirrings in Pennsylvania now that Doug Mastriano, having been defeated by 14 points for governor, thinks that he should be running for Senate.
Well, and that's interesting news.
Yeah.
Because he's bound to lose.
Well, the thing is, he might not lose in the primary.
I understand that. I understand.
Does
that mean that McCormick stays out?
Well, that's a decision McCormick's going to have to make. He's going to say, do I want to waste another $15 million of my own money on a losing cost? Or is he going to do extensive focus grouping and see how we can cut down on Mastriano's base?
But right now, Mastriano is ahead of McCormick, right, in all the polling.
Way ahead. He's got the name recognition from the last time. And, you know, that part of the party doesn't like McCormick, you know, a banker, you know, or a hedge fund manager, rather.
Yeah.
Who's trying to be an aw-shucks kind of guy. It could be a bloodbath again. And Bob Casey can only hope, and he might pull a Josh Shapiro and, you know, help Mastriano win that nomination, because Mastriano versus Casey is going to be another 14-point loss for the Republicans.
Well, the Republican MAGAites are meeting this weekend, as we're speaking. They're meeting, and their meeting is headlined by DeSantis. He's giving the keynote. Kellyanne Conway, she's giving a keynote. And McCormick is giving a keynote. So that's interesting, right?
It'll be interesting. We'll have to rely on reports, because I doubt if they're going to allow a lot of reporting on it, but we'll have to rely on reports as to how people were received and what they said. Is McCormick going to, you know, try to attack, you know, hug Trump again, like he did last time to try to beat Oz? Or is he going to
take
a different course?
We'll know next week. Somebody's going to talk about it.
We'll know next week.
Well, I'll see you next week. We're done now.
Yep. We'll see you next week. And spring will have sprung by then.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.